Let's go, girls.
Welcome to the AmeriChicks with Kim Monson and Molly Vogt. Molly is a former mutual fund consultant and retirement plan specialist who is currently the director and founder of My Purse Politics. Kim served as a city councilwoman, is a former investment broker, and now a successful entrepreneur. Now, let's hear what's hatching in local and national politics with the AmeriChicks. Molly and Kim.
Hey, welcome back to Heart of the Matter.
Hey.
There we go.
It's the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim on 1690 AM, KDMT, Denver's Money Talk. Happy Monday.
Yeah, Monday. I didn't have everything plugged in here, Molly. So we are the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, and we're going to be talking about important issues and bring them forward and look at them as right versus wrong instead of right versus left. And we bring forth also human interest stories throughout the week, whether or not it's how public policy is affecting people's lives. Human interest stories, exceptional endeavors of determination, perseverance, and success. And then, of course, our World War II project. And that is every Friday afternoon. So we're going to have another great World War II story this Friday. So let's get right to it, Molly. Important issues that should be on people's radar. I was very blue regarding what had happened with the healthcare situation here in America. You know, we're both freedom girls, love freedom. However, I'm disappointed in the Freedom Caucus because I think that we missed our opportunity with getting rid of Obamacare. And I know it was complicated, but as I really looked at that, it seemed to make sense that first of all, that we would get rid of everything that we could via reconciliation and then give Secretary of Health and Human Services, Tom Price, the ability to walk back all of those regulations that have been put into place, and those have been embedded throughout the country. So that seemed to make sense, and I know it was a leap of faith that in that third phase that we were going to put in a lot of those freedom kind of fixes that we wanted, but it seemed like a pretty good option given what's out there. And now, Molly, we wake up on Monday morning, and we still have Obamacare. Businesses are wondering what they're going to do. And I think we've done a real disservice.
Yeah, well, you're right. You know, we went from right after the election, people being very excited and hopeful about what was going to take place. They're going to have money to invest again. You know, the mandates are going to go away. The extra taxes are going to go away. Their health insurance is going to get cheaper. And now you say, wow, the Republicans can't even work together to get this done. That's sad, and it's hard to understand. And, you know, one of two things are going to happen. Either what President Trump said is, we are going to let it just fall. It's going to just completely fall, and everybody's going to be hurt. But everybody's been hurt a lot recently over the past several years anyway because of Obamacare. So either that's going to crash, or they're going to come together and the Republicans and the Democrats are going to work together and come up with another plan. We've got to completely repeal Obamacare and come up with some free market solutions and get the government out of the way. I mean, they're the problems. They've been the problem to begin with in healthcare. Get them out of the way. But for anybody out there this year that does find themselves suffering, if you live in Colorado, for healthcare options, check out Cloud Medical. Dr. David Tusek, just wanted to let you know he's a direct pay doc and has some ties to some other types of insurance that are outside of the Obamacare requirements that are going to be less expensive for you. So I just wanted you to know there's an option, local, free market.
Well, I love it. I actually am very pessimistic. I don't see this coming back for a little while. And I think we had a chance and I think we blew it. And I'm really frustrated about it. And so that's the first thing.
Yeah. Well, and the next thing is now we're going to be working on taxes. And this, if we were able to put through what they were working on and getting rid of these extra taxes and regulations in Obamacare, we were going to start already with $1 billion less in taxes. Now this is going to make that harder. So hopefully the Republicans can work together, and hopefully some Democrats as well, on the tax bill.
Yep. Hopefully. Okay, next thing, the Democrats have delayed the vote on Neil Gorsuch for Supreme Court Justice by a week, and I just want to let you know that. I find that frustrating as well, so it's been a Monday.
Well, and they're doing it for political reasons, because I know, you know, you've got people on the right and people on the left, and they're asking Gorsuch questions, and he did a really great job. I mean, there was nothing that was like a really big, you know, thing in your mind to stick out and go, oh, he's not going to be good, he's not going to be fair, he doesn't know the Constitution. He absolutely does. He is an originalist, and I think people on both sides of the aisle thought he did a really great job, but they're not going to push forward with him because it's a political thing that the left says, well, we've got to hold out.
Right.
So it's a Republican versus Democrat thing, which stinks. I hate politics, but why don't we get the right person in so they can do the job?
I totally agree. Okay. Next thing, Molly, what's on your radar?
Well, one thing is a couple of things they talked about today during the White House briefing. I was excited to see the head of the EPA now come out and say that Trump tomorrow is actually going to sign an executive order to undo the Clean Power Plan rule. And, you know, a really good comment that Scott Pruitt said is, we've accepted the narrative that if you're pro-growth and pro-jobs, you're anti-environment. And if you're pro-environment, you're anti-jobs or growth. Now we're going to be both pro-jobs and pro-environment. And this is going to address the past administration's efforts to kill jobs across the country through the Clean Power Plan. I think that's a great thing. You know, we have really put a hurting on lower and middle income budgets, making energy more affordable by requiring certain, you know, clean energy to be what we're using instead of using what's actually available. And we have access to quality, clean energy in America due to fracking and all kinds of other advances here in America. We have access to it. If you don't let us use it, you make the cost go up and you're hurting the people that need their money the most.
Right.
So I'm glad to see that, no, we're not going to go hurt the environment. We're gonna do something safe. We're gonna do it smart, and we're gonna make it affordable again to you.
Yes. So even though kind of got slapped around on this healthcare situation, I love the fact that this morning President Trump, he's up there and he's going to work on the things that he said he was going to do, and I appreciate that with him. And then last thing, Molly.
Last thing is they talked about the sanctuary cities today. Attorney General Sessions actually also joined that White House press briefing today. He gave a message to sanctuary cities to carefully consider the damage they're doing to national security and public safety. I totally agree 100%. We've talked about what happened in Maryland, in Rockville, Maryland, at the school where that poor ninth grade girl was raped by two illegal immigrants that should not have been here and certainly should not have been in a public school. But Sessions actually called out Colorado specifically in his example in his speech today, which was scary to me, but saying, you know, we're going to have to start following the law or we're going to lose our funding. Now, I'm not all for federal government funding, but I tell you what, I do want our policemen to be enforcing the law because that's protecting me and my friends and my community. Stick with us. It's the AmeriChicks. We'll be right back. Water's Edge Winery is a craft winery located in the heart of Centennial. Locally owned, Chad and Jennifer are currently making more than 30 international varietals with very low sulfites with you in mind. Drop in anytime to watch the winemaker at work or experience a wine tasting. Sample some of their delicious meats and cheeses or chocolates. So grab your girlfriends, bring your book club, celebrate any occasion in their tasting room. Water's Edge Winery is located across from the streets at South Glen and Centennial. Call them today, 720-381-6663. Website is wewdenver.com, and we'll see you at the Water's Edge Winery, your new happy place.
Home is where the heart is. It's that safe place where memories are made, meals shared, and holidays celebrated. When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you need to work with RE/MAX award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine has helped individuals navigate the ups and downs of the Denver real estate market for over 28 years. Karen is honest, trustworthy, and has your best interests in mind. Karen takes the time to understand your unique wants and needs and can help you make the best decision for you and your family. Give Karen Levine a call at 303-877-7516 for a no-cost consultation or visit her online at KarenLevine@remax.net and tell her the AmeriChicks sent you.
Hey, welcome back. We are the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, and we are looking at important issues. I'm very excited to have our guest on with us, Oz Guinness. He is an author, a speaker, and a social critic. He is a big thinker, Molly, and he is the great-great-grandson of Arthur Guinness, the Dublin brewer. He was born in China in World War II, and he was a witness to the climax of the Chinese Revolution in 1949. He's edited or written over 30 books. And prior to moving to the United States, he was a freelance reporter with the BBC. So he knows a lot about a lot of important things, and he really thinks about important big ideas. And so we've got some questions that we have asked him. But before we do that, we need to make sure that everybody knows kind of some basics. And one of those, Oz, welcome. It's great to have you with us.
Well, thank you. Great delight to be back on the game with you.
wanted to very quickly have you explain the golden triangle of freedom for our listeners.
Okay, well, that's the idea that how do you sustain freedom? In other words, the framers won freedom, the revolution. They ordered freedom, that's the Constitution. But they also had a clear idea you needed to sustain freedom or perpetuate it. And oddly enough, that's our task now, all these years later, but we've almost forgotten it. And people are talking about sustainable capitalism, sustainable environments, and all these sort of things. They don't talk about sustainable freedom. But the frame of system they didn't give a name to, I call it the Golden Triangle, but you can see right across the board, they all believed in roughly three things. First, that freedom requires virtue. Only a virtuous people are capable of freedom, John Adams said. In other words, you need to have things like honesty, loyalty, patriotism. But secondly, virtue of any sort requires faith of some sort. And thirdly, the third leg of the triangle, faith of any sort requires freedom. And rather like the recycling triangle, it just goes round and round. Freedom requires virtue, which requires faith, which requires freedom, which requires virtue. And that is what I call the golden triangle of freedom. And if this generation abandons it, either we won't sustain freedom, or people are going to put something better in the place of what the founders set up.
Well, now, Oz, that brings forth a question for today. I think that the founders understood that men are fallible, that in fact there could be evil in the world. But I'm not sure that everyone thinks that today. What's your comment? Do you think that there is evil in the world? Do people understand that?
We are making an incredibly important point. And one of the great questions everyone's got to ask if they lead an examined life, is there something wrong with humanity, a flaw, or not? Immanuel Kant, the great Enlightenment philosopher, talked about the crooked timber of humanity. Things go wrong. Now, you've got two broad options. The founders, coming out of a Jewish and Christian biblical position, believed in what the Jews called the inclination to evil, what Christians call sin. In other words, the danger politically was the abuse of power. And the whole idea of the separation of powers, checks and balances, was to stop the abuse of power. Now, the alternative was the French Revolution, not 1776, but 1789. And that was utopian. You go back to Jean-Jacques Rousseau. Man is born free, but everywhere he's in chains. So remove the chains, and humans will be perfectible. And you can see that utopianism in the French Revolution, the Russian Revolution, and the Chinese. And the fact is that we would say as Christians that people aren't perfect. And so it always goes wrong, and you need to create antidotes to the abuse of power. So I would be strongly in favor of the biblical position, not the utopian, and therefore of 1776 and the American Revolution, and not the craziness of the French, the Chinese, and the Russian. And that's an incredibly important difference. And today you say, having, say, the sexual revolution, just remove repression and all be well. The sexual revolution, in fact, goes back to 1789, and it's utopian. So what you're raising is incredibly important.
Okay, we have a caller on the line for a question for you, Oz. So go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, is it Ron?
It is.
Okay, Ron, you have a question for Oz?
I do. First, let me say, Dr. Ennis, I met you in the early 1980s when you were here.
Oh, wonderful.
As I recall, from Le Brie in England.
That's right.
So,
no,
enjoyed your talks. My question to you is, I read an article recently that says Christians more and more in the United States are not wanting to attend church. In your opinion, what's going on?
Well, a whole lot of things are going on. You could say that the Jewish-Christian, say, of the Eisenhower era has gone. We've seen first an explosion of pluralism, so it's now said everyone is now everywhere. And that brings with it a relativism and a sense of doubt in what each person believes. But then through the excesses of the religious right, the Christian right, you've got something of an American backlash against the Christian faith that you have in Europe in a much stronger way as a backlash against the established churches. So you've got, and then of course after 9/11 and the way that extremism is associated with religion, you've got people talking about religious freedom as freedom from religion, not for religion. You've got a huge rise of the so-called religious nuns. But it's important, N-O-N-E-S, but it's important to say that the nuns are not actually secularist. They're actually highly religious, but they're just, they've lost trust in religious ideas and religious institutions. Now, those of us who are followers of Jesus, we've got to say to our Lord, sorry, we haven't lived out the faith well, and restore through revival, reformation, the integrity of Christian ways of doing things and Christian beliefs and Christian ways of life, so that people can have a trust in it again. Sadly, the church is at low ebb, and there are many people who, for understandable reasons, no longer trust it. But this won't last. And we've got to make sure that we're not part of the problem, we're part of the answer.
Oz, you know, we're speaking with Oz Guinness. This is Molly. Speaking of being a part of the problem versus part of the solution, you know, Edmund Burke had said that all evil needs to flourish is for good men to remain silent. Right now in Colorado, well, in America, I'm wondering if we are allowing evil because we're remaining silent. You know, we see that so many illegal immigrants have come across our borders that we have caught, that we knew were doing illegal crimes as far as drugs, their gangs, rape, murder, kidnapping, you know, all types of things. I mean, we have this MS-13 gang that has, I think, over 40,000 plus members in L.A. alone. I mean, these gangs are here and they're being allowed to flourish. And these unaccompanied minors are sent to our public schools, like we just saw in Maryland. And these two guys just raped this ninth grade girl. And people in the communities are saying that we should not be turning in illegal immigrants. They're saying our law enforcement should not work with the federal government or with ICE to make sure that people are here illegally that mean to do us harm, that don't come here to follow or obey our laws, that we should turn a blind eye and allow them to stay. I personally feel, Oz, like that's kind of evil because we're allowing this to happen. We're ignoring this evil and we're allowing these people to attack our kids. But I wonder what you think about that as a definition of evil and integrity and what we should be doing today.
Well, there's no question we have seen real evils. You cited some examples. You think of Kate Steinle in San Francisco.
Right.
But we've got to distinguish between people caught up in these things, say refugees, and some of the movements and the social policies, political policies, which are disastrous. In other words, Christians care for the people while they also expose and unmask and attack the policies, which are often sometimes just very un-American or even openly disastrous and evil. So take the current immigration and think of it this way. You know, one side is talking of walls and the other side of sanctuary cities. But the real issue is America and its identity and unity. So you take the old motto, a pluribus unum, out of many, one. In the 60s, that sense of the unum, the uniting first principles, was abandoned, particularly through the abandonment of civic education and public schools. So for nearly 50 years now, no one's taught what it is to be American. And so with the open door policies, immigration, as it's put so well, is putting more of a stamp on the country than the revolution. And this is a disaster for America. And it simply can't go on. And as you say rightly, the net effect at the coalface level are the crimes and things that are happening. But you can't just say build a wall. No, you've got to have clear boundaries. That's absolutely true. And I agree with the president on that. But when people come here, whether they're legal or illegal, they've got to be taught what it is to be American. In other words, what we're talking about is a matter of identity, a matter of unity, and also a matter of security, and all the different factors have to be put into place.
I agree with that. And so, Oz, how do we teach them if they're here illegally, they don't go through the naturalization process. So they're not sitting down and learning really American civics, and they're not learning our law. And many of them come from countries whose laws are so different than ours that I don't even think it's like they think that they're breaking a law. They don't know our laws because they came illegally and we let them go. So how do they learn? How do we teach them?
But Molly, America used to do that so well. It was called the melting pot. And people came from Ireland and Italy and Greece and countries in Europe where they were opposed to, say, religious freedom. And then through public education, civic education in the public schools, the melting pot turned them into Americans. Mm-hmm. So back in Europe, they were tied by blood and kinship. And here, They were tied by beliefs. Back in Europe, they thought of the past, and they became Americans and thought of the future. And the melting pot was actually sometimes a little coercive, but it was very powerful and very important, but it's gone. And without that, you'll only have chaos.
Mm-hmm.
But my point is you've got to look at all the issues, from the individuals right up to the national issues, and fight for a better way.
Oz, this is Kim here, and Molly's point regarding assimilation of immigrants coming to America is an important one, but you hit on it, and that is the other thing about our public education or our education system. I am actually shocked that, you know, in public discourse that we can no longer have all these ideas. I remember as a kid, my father, who was very conservative, you know, in the 60s, we had all these different ideas, and he's like, I don't agree with those. However, I think it's important that, you know, we have freedom, public discourse. Little did I realize that that was chipping away at the American idea. And so what do you think about that?
No, again, you're absolutely right. You know, I would argue, if you look at the current debates, obviously Washington and much of the country bitterly polarized, but it's not really Democrats and Republicans, or, as they say, the heartlanders against the coastals, or the so-called globalists against the nationalists. Those are all important differences. But I would argue the deepest difference of all is you have people who are the allies and heirs of 1776. In other words, the American Revolution, which was inspired by biblical ideas, and the heirs and allies of 1789, the French Revolution, and ideas that were inspired by the Enlightenment. Now, the tragedy is, to your point, the thinking world, the universities, and the press and media have been virtually overtaken by 1789, take, say, political correctness, and so on. The, you know, the former provost of Stanford,
you know, Oz Guinness,
made a very powerful speech.
Hold that thought. We're going to go to break, and then let's finish this thought when we come back. It's Oz Guinness and the Americhicks, Molly and Kim, KDMT, 1690 AM. Every business needs great branding, an effective website, professional photography, and videos to promote their products and services. Normally, businesses have to find numerous providers to handle all this work while incurring substantial costs. That's where Desi On Demand comes in. You choose your budget, and you choose your services from Desi On Demand's menu. Kim Munson here. Molly and I heartily endorse the creativity, innovation, dedication, and integrity that Brand and the founder of Desi and his team bring to the table. Check out Desi On Demand's website at mydesi.com, that's D-E-Z-I, or call 303-359-1522 and tell them the Americhicks sent you.
It's complicated. Life, sometimes. Bookkeeping, sometimes. Taxes, all the stinking time. That's why you need to work with the proven professionals at Predovich & Company. They offer exceptional services to individuals, businesses, and nonprofits. Serving the South Metro area, the team at Predovich & Company takes a proactive approach in understanding your tax, accounting, and bookkeeping needs. Tax day's right around the corner, so call the pros at Predovich & Company today. 303-791-3000 or check out the website at dpredovich.com. And be sure to tell them the Americhicks sent you.
I got this feeling.
Hey, this is the Americhicks, Molly and Kim on 1690 AM. We are talking with Oz Guinness, who's a great-great-grandson of the Dublin Brewer and an author, speaker, big thinker. And we had him on previously, and he does a really good description talking about our founding fathers and what they really meant, what the plan was, and he's talked about the golden triangle, how freedom requires virtue, virtue requires faith, faith requires freedom. And I'm wondering, you know, keep wondering, how is it that we can protect our country today? Because we see there is evil in this world, and unfortunately it wants to get rid of the Western way of life. And as we struggle with our education system, then I wonder where else we can look. Oz, before we went to break, you had mentioned, you know, we are the great melting pot. And during our founding fathers' time and beyond, we were a great melting pot, and people came from all kinds of different countries and backgrounds and cultures. But when they came here, they went to school and they learned civics. They learned about the history of our country. They learned our laws. And so they became American in the same idea that all of us were, even though they had their own backgrounds and they kept all of that. And that pride, but they became Americans because they understood the American idea. Today, it doesn't seem like the American idea is being taught in public schools or in universities. So what do you think we can do to start changing that?
Well, that's a huge task indeed. But I would put it like this. Back up a bit. The scandal of the American church is that while in most of the countries of the modern world, the church is a minority, say European countries, for historical reasons, here the Christian church is the majority, a huge majority, far more than 70% of Americans. And yet, tiny minorities, good ones like, say, the Jews are less than 2%, or ones we might disagree with in a lot of things, like the gay and lesbian groups, less than 2%, but they have far more cultural influence than Christians. And the fact is that Christians have lost the saltiness and the light-bearing quality. And to me, it's sad that people are talking about the Benedict option and sort of strategic retreat and things like this, where it's a time really to think what it means to engage with culture as salt and light in all our callings. And one of the biggest is to engage the thinking world, whether it's the press and media or the university world, because we are the last great defenders of many of the great and important ideas. So we should move out with confidence, but it can't be done in 5 minutes. We've let them go over 200 years. It'll take a while to win it back.
Sure.
It's Kim here. It does take a while to roll back 200 years on that. But it seems to me that, and maybe this goes back to one of your quotes, that freedom is its own worst enemy, or the greatest enemy is freedom. A freedom is freedom. And what I've seen that has happened in America is complacency. Complacency in some ways seems evil. We're talking about evil. So can those two things be connected, Oz Guinness?
No, sadly, you're exactly right. And a lot of people forget that freedom is its own worst enemy, and it undermines itself. You always see it go down in one of three ways. Either it becomes license and permissiveness and then sort of anarchy, and then it undermines itself, or it becomes such a desire for security and safety that it becomes so safe and secure, it's no longer free. One nation under surveillance. Think of all the leaks about what the CIA are doing now in spying on Americans. And the third way is the way that freedom is so important to people, they'll do anything to fight for it, including things that contradict freedom, and so on. So you can see freedom is very fragile and usually fleeting, and you have to handle it in a very responsible way.
You know, Oz, one of the things that Molly mentioned, and I served for 4 years on city council, and this was something that was kind of a realization to me, is that we talk about America being a nation of laws. But, you know, you could make a law that all the redheads have to do all the dishes for everybody here at the station, which means Molly and I would have to be doing dishes here. And that would be a law.
That we would break willingly. No.
But the other thing about the laws of America is they needed to make sure that they didn't stomp all over people's property rights. So a democracy could say, okay, everybody votes and Molly and Kim have to do all the dishes. But that stomps all over our property rights. And so whether or not it's an ordinance at a city council all the way up to a law that Congress makes or a rule or regulation, being a nation of laws, it has to have a framework for those laws, correct?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And this is where Alexis de Tocqueville is so good. You know, he says the secret of American freedom is not geography, and it's not politics, and it's not even law. Law is precious and essential, but he said the secret of American freedom is the habits of the heart. No, it's not the structures of freedom, but the spirit of freedom, what Lord Moulton called obedience to the unenforceable. In other words, when you could do something, but you know it's wrong, and so you decide not to, not because the law forces you. And the trouble is that with the ethical chaos in the country now, everything's turned into compliance rather than people with character and virtue who do what's right. And so when freedom collapses, you have more and more laws until finally you have no freedom. And that's the way we're going. So there's a crisis. Got to bring in 10 more regulations or 100 more. And you can see that's what the Democrats did under Obama. And Trump's trying to reverse them. And whether Americans have the character and the ethics now to be free, that's the question.
Well, Oz Guinness, you mentioned something that is so antithetical to freedom. We become a society where we are to be compliant with all the rules and the regulations. And the danger in rules and regulations where people have to be compliant is that there's no way that you can see if everybody is compliant. So then the rulemakers become, they pick winners and losers. So this guy over here may not be compliant, but nobody even looks at him. But there's just this fear of compliancy that I think almost paralyzes an economy and paralyzes a free people to go out after their hopes and dreams.
Well, as the Old Testament says, you know, litigation spreads like a poisonous weed in the field. And you can see, say, there's a crisis, so the SEC brings in more regulations. Immediately, the lawyers see how they can get around that, and the lobbyists. And then you have to bring more regulations to close that door, and then that door, and that door. And eventually, you have no freedom at all. And you can see how it's going in America. In other words, once again, freedom requires a certain way of life. It requires truth. And the way Americans abandon the way that defends freedom spells a recipe for the end of freedom. And we've got to challenge all these things. Freedom takes certain ways of doing things, and if you do it other ways, it won't last. I'm actually writing a book now. It's finished, but I haven't got a publisher yet. I haven't sent it to a publisher. That's a checklist of 10 questions to ask Americans about what they think of freedom, this and that issue, because many of the current views of freedom are unsustainable, and some of them are actually disastrous.
Well, and when I think about that, what would it look like when people answer your checklist, Oz Kenneth? I think people are going to say, well, it depends on whose freedom they're attacking and what their personal view of those people are. You know, where the... There seem to be so many people who are bullying others for their personal beliefs and attacking them for what they say out loud. I don't know. I don't think that a lot of people really understand freedom. I don't think that they understand that it should be equal across all, you know, sexes, colors, race, socioeconomic background, everything. It seems like some people think only they should be free, but only if you agree with them should you be free. How do we get back to everybody's free, regardless?
You're saying it so well, you don't meet me on the program at all. But put it like this. In 1776, the Constitution actually grows from the Jewish idea of covenant. And at the heart of covenant, go back to the book of Exodus, is the idea that everyone has a reciprocal responsibility for everyone. Love your neighbor as yourself. And you love the stranger, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas if you go back to the French Revolution, there's no truth. So everything's not a matter of truth or ethics. It's a matter of power. And you have, as you said, bullying, domination, the weak going to the wall and the strong winning, and so on. There's no question, you know, which way America's going today. We talk about post-truth America. Well, that's really what Nietzsche talked about 200 years ago as postmodernism. And it's absolutely disastrous. So the net effect is we who are followers of Jesus, we are the last great defenders and champions of real freedom. We have a grounding for it, and we have boundaries for it. We are the last great champions of freedom. So we should move out with confidence and courage and take on the lousy views that are all around us, which will be disastrous.
Well, Oz Guinness, thank you so much. We actually had some other questions that have been coming in, and so we'll have to circle back and have you on again. But we've been talking with Oz Guinness. He's just really a big thinker. And this has been a great conversation, Oz. Thank you so much. We appreciate your time this evening.
Always a delight to be with you, Kim and Molly. Thank you.
Thanks, Oz. Check out his new book, Checklist, What People Think of Freedom. And this is the AmeriChicks. We'll be right back. Like what you're hearing from the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, chances are your future clients do too. Let us help you promote your business and fatten up your wallet. To feature your business on the AmeriChicks program, email us at AmeriChicks@gmail.com. We feature the most topical news and intriguing guests every weekday during afternoon drive time, 5 to 6 p.m., while you and your clients are enjoying the program on your way home from work. So become a sponsor today by emailing the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, at AmeriChicks@gmail.com. That's the AmeriChicks@gmail.com. Or visit us online at AmeriChicks.com.
Guy Whidden, 101st Airborne, landed Normandy in the dark on D-Day 1944, was knocked out on the jump, woke up, a gun to his head. What happened next? If you love the AmeriChicks World War II project on Fridays and know a World War II vet, we'd love to share their story. We're in a race against time to gather as many stories as possible and as quickly as possible to preserve them for all future generations. So if you know a World War II vet or have that great World War II story to share, email us at AmeriChicks@gmail.com. That's the AmeriChicks@gmail.com.
Hey, welcome back. We are the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, and we are looking at important issues and bringing them forward so that you know what's going on out there. It's Monday, Molly, and what that is, that's Principles of Liberty Day. They spend all weekend looking at the bills that are going to be coming before the legislature here in Colorado, and then they will rate many of them. They'll either support them, oppose them, or maybe just say, hey, we're still looking at it. So we have Chelsea Spencer on the line, and she is with Principles of Liberty. And you guys have been busy this weekend, haven't you, Chelsea?
Yes, we have. Thank you so much for having us. We had about a dozen bills on our report.
You know, Chelsea, I'm going to stop you for just a moment. We've got a bad connection. So why don't you, I'm going to have Don call you right back so that we have a good connection, because I know everybody wants to hear everything that you have to say. So we're just going to let them do that. And one of the first things, and we just talked about that briefly, but they had given information regarding this thing that really had your dander up last week, and that was making little kids get a license to dog sit their neighbor's dog or cat or guinea pig or whatever.
Yeah, no pun intended. I know Representative Ling Science actually asked the question in the hearing, you know, so wait a minute. You're saying that my daughter has to have a license to watch her neighbor's guinea pigs? They said, yes, she's breaking the law. Ridiculous, right? Yeah. I mean, of course kids are going to go out and you know, help walk somebody's dog or feed their dog.
That's how kids learn to work.
Yeah, and you know, some senior citizens do the same thing as well on the side to get a little extra cash. So while it seems like this bill was going to try to make it safer for pets because there'd be some sort of regulation, there already is regulation on the big dogs,
I'm not even sure they need to have that. But
to be going and telling, you know, little Sally or grandma that they can't be watching the dogs, that's just a little too much. Welcome back, Chelsea.
Thank you. Well, it sounds like I caught you ladies in the middle of discussing the House Bill 1228, which we're calling the doggy daycare bill. Is that right?
Yeah,
that's
And we talked about it last week. We think it's goofy.
Yeah, so tell us the next one that's on your radar.
All right. Well, the doggy daycare one was probably the biggest one we did this week. We went back and revisited that one because we had a lot of interest in that particular bill, as you ladies may have heard. And sometimes we'll go back and revisit a bill when we get a lot of interest on it, and we'll do a little bit of a more in-depth explanation. So for those of you who are interested, you can go back and find that on our website, www.liberty.org. We have all of the bills there. Or you can go ahead and use the website to jump onto our email list, and you can catch these reports that we send out at the beginning of each week. Then I should mention we also have a Facebook page as well. So if you're not following that, you missed out this week on a hilarious picture of a pug in a blanket in honor of this bill. So I'd encourage you to find us there.
You know, and Chelsea, just a quick note. It is interesting that actually something seems kind of goofy and kind of mundane, that you can actually really kind of take a look at what's going on with government. And this thing is so over the top that I think it is a good example. And so definitely go to principlesofliberty.org and take a look at all the thought process that you guys put in there, because it is important for the conversation about liberty and freedom.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's interesting that something as simple as a bill on pet sitting can actually be, and in this case is, a prime example of concepts like rent seeking and regulatory capture. And those are principles we cover at the classes we teach in the fall. But we also go through in our explanation of the bill this week and explain how, you know, rent seeking is using government to your advantage to regulate your competition and create barriers to entry. And that's what's happening here. In addition to regulatory capture, when you get so good at rent seeking that you manage to get your people on the board that advise the creation of these rules, you begin to start being able to regulate yourself effectively. And, well, how are you going to regulate yourself? You're going to regulate your industry in a way that benefits you to the exclusion of competition. It's just sort of the natural order of things once you allow government to get too powerful and interest groups to start to take control.
Well, and Chelsea, that is an excellent example. And as you were talking about this, it made me think about Dodd-Frank and the banking industry. So here we've got on one hand, we've got doggy daycare, But it is so related to too big to fail. Because what happened with Dodd-Frank is they came in with rules and regulations that have put the little guys, the community banks, have been either have been bought out or have gone out of business. And you have gotten banks that have gotten bigger and bigger because they've been able to use rules and regulations to put the little guy out of business. So that's why if you take a look at the principles of liberty of this doggy daycare, you can take that all the way up to what happened with Dodd-Frank. And that is just amazing to me.
Absolutely. And another thing that I should mention, too, is we don't want to demonize the existing kennel industry in this particular case too much, because I think it's sort of a natural progression. Once government starts to regulate an industry, this industry is faced with all sorts of fees for licensing and fees to stay in compliance with the existing regulations. And that's tough on a business. So
sure,
we absolutely sympathize with that. But the solution, we would say, to government regulation is certainly not more government regulation. If there's a problem, we should probably be going in the other direction rather than saying, oh, we're going to fix this problem by saying you guys will just be subject to a different set of regulations, so you can be exempt from these ones. And we would say, you know, that's kind of a cure that's worse than the disease.
You got it. You got it. So, okay, what's your next one there, Chelsea?
All righty. So we had a couple of bills this week. One that we said supported government transparency. There was a bill to create a fraud hotline in the Office of the State Auditor. So that would sort of set up a system where people could report when they think state employees or state contractors are committing fraud. And it would be anonymous and sort of lends itself to the concept that government should be transparent and be held accountable and gives people an access point in order for them to do that.
Okay. Very good.
So that was a bill that was a positive note this week. Yeah. And then we had a couple of bills dealing with electricity and sort of save the planet type bills, just to characterize them broadly. We had some that were dealing with government getting involved in trying to lecture people through the electric companies on their electrical usage and say, hey, you guys need to have these programs in place that are going to reduce the demand of your consumers, which seems pretty counterintuitive, right, for a business to be telling its consumers, hey, we need you to reduce your consumption of our product, would you please? But that is nevertheless what's going on with House Bill 1227. And then we had another electricity bill, or fuel bill with 1232, which would essentially redo some of the regulations that are currently in place for where the money, the revenue goes from utility costs to allow them to essentially create, you know, more stations for electric cars and those sorts of things. And that can't be done currently.
Okay, so would those electric cars have to pay for that electricity, or how would that work, do you know?
You know, I would have to go back and look into the intricacies of the bill a little bit more,
okay,
and I don't have that particular
not to worry
in
okay
front of me. But yeah, but essentially rediverting those funds for government to go in and say, hey, free market, we think this is a good idea, so we're going to kind of redo some regulations in order to encourage that is certainly not the role of government. That's the role of the free market. And if, you know, if electric cars are an idea that's working out great for us on a free market and companies want to pursue that, we completely support that. That's the beauty of the free market. However, it's not the role of government to make the determination for the market which direction it should head.
Right. Okay. We've got just a couple more minutes. So what's the next one for you, Chelsea?
Sure. So we have 1253, which is protecting seniors from financial abuse. And on its face, that's a pretty tough title to come across, right? Because nobody wants to see seniors subject to financial abuse. And a lot of times we'll see this with bills. The title is sort of indicative of the motive behind the bill or how a sponsor wants the bill to be interpreted. And in this case, obviously, I think the intentions are great. However, what this does is it increases reporting requirements for people in the financial industry. And that's a tricky thing. For government to be telling people in private industry what they have to report opens a pretty big can of worms. Once you start telling these people, hey, if you even suspect this is happening, you need to come to the government and file a report, and there's going to be all these exemptions, it puts them in a tricky spot and causes people who would otherwise hopefully behave conscientiously to say, you know, I'm not sure, I think I may have to report this just to cover myself so that I don't find myself in violation of state law, even though I'm pretty sure it's not going on.
You know what,
Chelsea? It puts people in a bit of a tough position.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, it kind of makes me think about the same thing as the government saying that there's certain things have to be different for people on Medicaid and Medicare, and there's going to be a certain amount of reimbursement that's different. So it almost like it's telling financial advisors, you know what, don't take on the elderly because you're going to have to do more. You're going to be regulated higher. You're going to have more paperwork, and it's going to be more expensive for you to do that. And anytime they, you know, same thing with women when they say, oh, well, we're gonna make it easier for women to take more time off and women need to be paid more and all that kind of stuff, where they're kind of like the affirmative action, where the employers say, you know what, then I can't afford to hire women if I'm going to have to give them all these extra benefits up and above a man. So when the government says they want to protect you, it seems like a good idea at first, but you walk it through and say the extra hassle it's going to put on, you know, X, Y, and Z makes it more financially painful and time consuming. So you're not really helping me out, yo.
That's an excellent point. Yes, a lot of times there are unintended consequences to government policies, and that's just another great argument for limited government.
Yeah.
Okay, Chelsea, I know there's some other ones. We're getting short on time. How about this 1286? That seems like a little bit of an overreach on government. The state employee health care requirements.
Yes. So essentially what this bill does is it is dictating terms of contract for health carriers. Now, if that was simply a, hey, if you guys are going to provide us with services, this is what we want the service to include, that's fine, right? That's part of the negotiation you do when you're doing business. However, this bill goes a little bit too far in that it starts to say, hey, if you're going to do business with us in this contract, you also have to be doing that over there and this over here. And, you need to be participating in bids on Medicaid or children's basic health insurance plans. In addition to, by the way, we want you to provide health plans in at least two counties in a geographic rating area with the highest premiums in the individual market. So essentially what government is doing is leveraging its contract to dictate what companies need to be doing in different areas or sort of extended areas. And that to us looks like a little bit of an overreach, making you a deal you don't really have the power to refuse if you want. It seems like a bit too far.
Okay. Well, Chelsea Spencer, thank you so much with Principles of Liberty for that Monday report. We greatly appreciate it. Molly, it has been quite the show today. And with our quote, we had talked with Oz Guinness about virtue, and I thought George Washington had a great comment. He said, human rights can only be assured among a virtuous people. The general government can never be in danger of degenerating into a monarchy, an oligarchy, an aristocracy, or any despotic or oppressive form, so long as there is any virtue in the body of the people.
This is the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, signing off. And we would love for you to join us tomorrow, same time, same place, 1690 a.m., 5 to 6 p.m. drive time. We'll see you there. Have a good night. This is food.